There was a wide center track with narrower tracks branching left and right. Trifonov directed us through the maze, and we stopped outside a sagging lime-green trailer that had seen better days. Its paint was peeling, and the tar-paper roof was curling. It had a smoking chimney and the blue light of a television behind its windows.
"Her name is Elena," Trifonov said.
We left him locked in the Humvee, knocked on Elena's door. The woman who opened it could have stepped straight into the encyclopedia under B for battered woman. She was a mess. She had old yellow bruises all around her eyes and along her jaw, and her nose was broken. She was holding herself in a way that suggested old aches and pains and maybe even newly broken ribs. She was wearing a thin house dress and men's shoes. But she was clean and bathed, and her hair was tied back neatly. There was a spark of something in her eyes. Some kind of pride, maybe, or satisfaction at having survived. She peered out at us nervously from behind the triple oppressions of poverty and suffering and foreign status.
"Yes,"
she said.
"Can I help you?"
Her accent was like Trifonov's, but much higher pitched. It was quite appealing.
"We need to talk to you,"
Summer said gently.
"What about?"
"About what Slavi Trifonov did for you," I said.
"He didn't do anything,"
she said. "But you know the name." She paused.
"Please, come in,"
she said. I guessed I was expecting some kind of mayhem inside. Maybe empty bottles strewn about, full ashtrays, dirt and confusion. But the trailer was neat and clean. There was nothing out of place. It was cold, but it was okay. And there was nobody else in it. "Your husband not here?" I said. She shook her head. "Where is he?" She didn't answer.
"My guess is he's in the hospital,"
Summer said.
"Am I right?"
Elena just looked at her. "Mr. Trifonov helped you," I said. "Now you need to help him." She said nothing. If he wasn't here doing something good, he was somewhere else doing something bad. That's the situation. So I need to know which it was. She said nothing. "This is very, very important," I said.
"What if both things were bad?"
she asked. "The two things don't compare," I said. "Believe me, not even close. So just tell me exactly what happened, okay?" She didn't answer right away. I moved a little deeper into the trailer. The television was tuned to PBS. The volume was low. I could smell cleaning products. Her husband had gone, and she'd started a new phase in her life with a mop and a pail, an education on the tube.
"I don't know exactly what happened,"
she said.
"Mr. Trifonov just came here and took my husband away."
"When?"
"The night before last, at midnight. He said he had gotten a letter from my brother in Sofia."
I nodded. "At midnight. He left Bird at 22:11. He was here an hour and 49 minutes later. 100 miles, an average of dead-on 55 miles an hour, in a Corvette." I glanced at Summer. She nodded. "Easy. How long was he here?"
"Just a few minutes. He was quite formal. He introduced himself, and he told me what he was doing and why."
"And that was it?" She nodded. "What was he wearing?"
"A leather jacket, jeans."
"What kind of a car was he in?"
"I don't know what it's called. Red and low. A sports car. It made a loud noise with its exhaust pipes."
"Okay," I said. I nodded to Summer, and we moved towards the door.
"Will my husband come back?"
Elena said. I pictured Trifonov as I'd first seen him. 6'6", 250, shaved head, the thick wrists, the big hands, the blazing eyes, and the 5 years with GRU. "I seriously doubt it," I said. We climbed back into the Humvee. Summer started the engine. I turned around and spoke to Trifonov through the wire cage. "Where'd you leave the guy?" I asked him.
"On the road to Wilmington," he said.
"When?"
3 o'clock in the morning. I stopped at the payphone and called 911. I didn't give my name."
"You spent 3 hours on him?" He nodded slowly.
"I wanted to be sure he understood the message."
Summer threaded her way out of the trailer park and turned west and then north towards Wilmington. We passed the tourist sign on the outskirts and went looking for the hospital. We found it a quarter mile in. It looked like a reasonable place. It was mostly two-story and had an ambulance entrance with a broad canopy. Summer parked in a slot reserved for a doctor with an Indian name, and we got out. I unlocked the rear door and let Trifonov out to join us. I took the cuffs off him, put them in my pocket. "What was the guy's name?" I asked him.
"Pickles," he said.
The three of us walked in together, and I showed my special unit badge to the orderly behind the triage desk. Truth is, it confers no rights or privileges on me out in the civilian world, but the guy reacted like it gave me unlimited powers, which is what most civilians do when they see it. "Early morning of January 5th, I said. "Sometime after 3 o'clock, there was an admission here." The guy riffed through a stack of aluminum clipboards and a stand to his right. Pulled two of them partway out.
"Male or female?" he said.
"Male." He dropped one of the clipboards back in its slot, pulled the other one all the way out.
"John Doe," he said. "Indigent male, no ID, no insurance, claims his name is Pickles. Cops found him on the road."
"That's our guy," I said.
"Your guy?"
he said, looking at my uniform. "We might be able to take care of his bill," I said. He paid attention to that, glanced at his stack of clipboards like he was thinking, one down, 200 to go.
"He's in post-op," he said.
He pointed towards the elevator.
"Second floor."
He stayed behind his counter. We rode up, the three of us together. Got out and followed the signs to the post-op ward. A nurse at a station outside the door stopped us. I showed her my badge. "Pickles," I said. She pointed us to a private room with a closed door across the hallway.
5 minutes only, she said. He's very sick.
Trifonov smiled. We walked across the corridor and opened the private room's door. The light was dim. There was a guy in the bed. He was asleep. Impossible to tell whether he was big or small. I couldn't see much of him. He was mostly covered in plaster casts. His legs were in traction, and he had big GSW bandage packs around both knees. Opposite his bed was a long light box at eye level that was pretty much covered with X-ray exposures. I clicked the light and took a look. Every film had a date and the name Pickles scrawled in the margin. There were films of his arms and his ribs and his chest and his legs. The human body has more than 210 bones in it, and it seemed like this guy Pickles had most of them broken. He'd put a big dent in the hospital's radiography budget all by himself. I clicked the light off and kicked the leg of the bed twice. The guy in it stirred, woke up, focused in the dim light, and the look on his face when he saw Trifonov was all the alibi Trifonov was ever going to need. It was a look of stark, abject terror. "You two wait outside," I said. Summer led Trifonov out the door, and I moved up to the head of the bed. "How are you, asshole?" I said. The guy called Pickles was all white in the face, sweating and trembling inside his casts.
"That was the man," he said. "Right there. He did this to me."
"Did what to you?"
"He shot me in the legs."
I nodded. Looked at the GSW packs. Pickles had been kneecapped. 2 knees, 2 bullets. 2 rounds fired. "Front or side?" I said.
"Side," he said.
"Front is worse," I said. "You were lucky. Not that you deserve to be lucky."
"I didn't do anything."
"Didn't you? I just met your wife."
"Foreign bitch."
"Don't say that,"
It's her own fault. She won't do what I tell her. Man needs to be obeyed, like it says in the Bible.
Shut up, I said.
Aren't you going to do something?
Yes, I said. I am. Watch. I swung my hand like I was brushing a fly off his sheets. Caught him with a soft backhander on the side of his right knee. He screamed, and I walked away and stepped out the door. Found the nurse looking over in my direction. He's very sick, I said. We rode down in the elevator and avoided the guy at the triage desk by using the main entrance. We walked around to the Humvee in silence. I opened the rear door for Trifonov, but stopped him on the way in. I shook his hand. I apologize, I said.
Am I in trouble?
He said. Not with me, I said. You're my kind of guy. But you're, very lucky. You could have hit a femoral artery. You could have killed him. Then it might have been different. He smiled briefly. He was calm.
I trained 5 years with GRU, he said. I know how to kill people. And I know how not to.
We gave Trifonov his Steyr back and let him out at the Delta gate. He probably signed the gun back in and then legged it to his room and picked up his book. Probably carried on reading right where he left off. We drove on and parked the Humvee in the MP motor pool. Walked back to my office. Summer went straight to the copy of the gate log. It was still taped to the wall next to the map.
Vasil and Kuma, she said. They were the only other people who left the post that night.
They went north, I said. If you want to say they threw the briefcase out of the car, then you have to agree they went north. They didn't go south to Columbia.
Okay, she said. So the same guy didn't do Carbone and Brubaker. There's no connection. We just wasted a lot of time.
Welcome to the real world, I said. The real world got a whole lot worse when my phone rang 20 minutes later. It was my sergeant, the woman with the baby son. She had Sanchez on the line calling from Fort Jackson. She put him through.
Willa's been and gone, he said. Unbelievable.
Told you so.
He pitched all kinds of hissy fits.
But you're fireproof.
Thank God.
I paused. Did you tell him about my guy? He paused.
Well, you told me to. Shouldn't I have?
It was a dry hole. Looked good at first, but it wasn't in the end.
Well, he's on his way up to see you about it. He left here 2 hours ago. He's gonna be very disappointed.
Terrific, I said.
What are you gonna do?
Summer asked. What is Willard? I said, fundamentally.
A careerist,
she said. Correct, I said. Technically, the Army has a total of 26 separate ranks. A grunt comes in as an E1 private. And as long as he doesn't do anything stupid, he's automatically promoted to an E2 private after a year, and to an E3 private first class after another year, or even a little earlier, if he's any good. Then the ladder stretches all the way up to a 5-star general of the Army. Although I wasn't aware of anyone except George Washington and Dwight David Eisenhower who had ever made it that far. If you count the E9 Sergeant Major grade as 3 separate steps to acknowledge the Command Sergeant Majors and the Sergeant Major of the Army, and if you count all 4 Warrant Officer grades, then a Major like me has 7 steps above him and 18 steps below him, which gives a Major like me considerable experience of insubordination, going both ways, up and down, given and taken. With 1 million people on 26 separate rungs on the ladder, insubordination was a true art form. And the canvas was one-on-one privacy. So I sent Summer away and waited for Willard on my own. She argued about it. In the end, I got her to agree that one of us should stay under the radar. She went to get a late dinner. My sergeant brought me a sandwich. Roast beef and Swiss cheese, white bread, little mayo, little mustard. The beef was pink. It was a good sandwich. Then she brought me coffee. I was halfway through my second cup when Willard arrived. He came straight in. He left the door open. I didn't get up, didn't salute, didn't stop sipping my coffee. He tolerated it, like I knew he would. He was being very tactical. As far as he knew, I had a suspect that could take Brubaker's case away from the Columbia PD and break the link between an elite colonel and drug dealers in a crack alley. So he was prepared to start out warm and friendly. Or maybe he was looking for a bonding experience with one of his staff.